You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Thursday, the 30th of March, 2023. Later, the Australian share market rises for the fourth session in a row. But first, to bank impersonation scams, where the ACCC says it has received more than 14,000 reports of the practice, resulting in more than $20 million worth of losses in 2022. So what can you do about it, and how can you spot one? Ben Terry spoke with the ACCC Deputy Chair, Katrina Lowe.
Obviously, scams are unfortunately not a new thing, but some of the figures that have been placed on it by the ACCC seem pretty alarming. What is the financial toll that these banking impersonation scams are having on Australians?
In 2022, we saw nearly 15,000 reports of bank impersonation scams involving losses over $20 million. And we know that lots of people don't report. It's estimated that around 13% of people report to ScamWatch. So the losses and the number of victims, we think, are much higher.
And based on the report that I've seen, there are some terrible instances of individuals losing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Could you give us a sense of some of those individual losses that people have suffered?
We are, unfortunately, in relation to bank impersonation scams in particular, seeing entire bank accounts being emptied. We saw one report, for example, of a gentleman who lost over $500,000 after he received a call questioning the authorisation of a transaction from what was apparently the fraud department of his bank.
That's his entire life savings, is that right?
That's right. He lost everything, and that is obviously not only financially devastating, but emotionally devastating as well.
Generally speaking, is there any recourse for people? Are they covered by their banks? Do they get any of that money back?
It can be very, very difficult for people to recover the money once it's lost. The key is to get in touch with your financial institution if you think you may have been scammed. But there is one really key piece of information that we are asking consumers to remember to avoid being scammed in the first place. And that is that no matter how convincing the phone call, no matter how realistic the text message seems, your bank will never ask you to transfer funds. So if you are being asked to transfer funds out of your bank account to supposedly keep it safe, that is the big red flag, that it's a scam.
First of all, in terms of the technology that's being used, I understand that some scammers are using new forms of technology to get people in even more sophisticated ways. Can you explain how that works?
Scammers ultimately are sophisticated criminals, so we are seeing continued evolution in the techniques that they will use to try and deceive people. Most recently, we are seeing increased use of technology such that they're able to, in effect, spoof the identities of trusted institutions. So the scammers might have the capacity, for example, to utilise what's called alpha tags in text messaging. And that means that their messages could appear within the legitimate text message feed of a financial institution. They're also able to utilise technology so that the number that they are calling from appears to be the legitimate number of a bank or major institution. So we are encouraging consumers to remember two things. One, don't click on links in text messages. And secondly, if you receive a call, don't just accept that call. If you think there may be a concern with your account, independently call your bank. Do your own research. Don't rely on the number that might appear in the text message.
Beyond the technology they're using, what sort of emotional tactics are they using to panic or create fear, cause panic or fear?
Scammers, unfortunately, are excellent at exploiting ordinary human emotions and reactions. So one of the things that they will try and do is create a sense of urgency or fear. And obviously it is concerning to people, not least in light of recent data breaches, to hear that their accounts may have been compromised. And people are particularly alert for those sorts of messages at this time, which unfortunately also makes people more susceptible to these types of scams. But we do ask consumers to remember three simple words when they're transacting, and that is stop, think, protect. So stop, don't click on the link, don't transfer funds to another account if you're being asked to. Think, is this something that a legitimate financial institution would really ask me to do? And we say no bank will ask you to transfer funds in these sort of circumstances. And finally, protect. If you do think something's gone wrong, contact your financial institution as soon as possible. It might be possible to block the transaction before it occurs and report the matter to ScamWatch.
Ben Terry there, speaking with the ACCC Chair, Katrina Lowe. Now to the Australian share market, which rose for a fourth straight session. The ASX 200 up 1% to 7,122. Tech and financial stocks leading the gains. For more, I spoke with Jody Fitzgerald from Morningstar. And the market focus really is on interest rates. Today, we heard from the Commonwealth Bank economist. They're now scrapping its April RBA rate hike call, instead now predicting a pause, joining Westpac. NAB still expects a rise. However, it now expects the peak to be lower at 3.85%. So what exactly is the market saying?
Well, the market at the moment is pricing in a pause in interest rate increases. So on, you know, on the balance, most people are siding with CBA's view, and that would leave the cash rate at 3.6%. But I think it's actually a fine balance with regards to whether or not they do hike in the April meeting or even in the May meeting. So while inflation has come in below expectations and there are signs of softening business confidence and retail sales, that could provide room for the RBA to adopt a wait-and-see approach in April, and that is the decision that has all the expectation that has been priced into markets. However, inflation came in at 6.8%. That is still well above the RBA's target of 2 to 3%. So any central banker who knows their history are well aware of the dangers in a stop-start approach to controlling inflation. The RBA has made it very clear that the key inputs into the April decision will be CPI, retail sales, business surveys, and employment data. Employment data is still very strong. Jobs data came in hotter than expected. And even though the inflation number for February came in lower, it's important to actually understand that the monthly series only covers about 60 to 65% of the official inflation series that comes out quarterly. And that is the number that the RBA will base policy off. So if we have a look at the playbook that's been used by other central banks, be it the Fed or the ECB, they have continued to hike into an environment where inflation is starting to ease, and even in the face of a potential banking crisis. So at the moment, I think there's a bit of risk in the view of the market that there won't be a rate hike. That said, given the changing conditions that we're starting to see in the market, it's quite feasible that the end of the hiking cycle will occur at some stage this year, and that will be the most meaningful things for investors towards the end of this year.
You mentioned a couple of things that I want to go into even more detail just there. You said those four key pieces of economic data, the RBA already mentioned it's looking at before the meeting. But the other thing that came left of field were those global banking concerns, right?
Yes.
But globally, we've heard from authorities basically trying to shore up confidence by saying, hey, the general banking system is fine. It's very different to what we saw in the global financial crisis. But is there anything about the global financial system that worries you at the moment?
So I think, you know, taking a step back with regards to what happened in the GFC versus now and making comparisons, it is different to what set off the GFC. The GFC was really a situation where there was poor lending standards and it was really a credit issue within the markets. Coming into this particular scenario, banks are actually a lot stronger and a lot more well capitalized than they were in the GFC. So it's a good starting point for us to be coming out of. With regards to what's actually occurred, specifically in the US, these are regional banks that have actually gotten themselves into trouble. So they're not the big banks, you know, they're not the equivalent of the Westpac or the CBA that we actually see here. They're the regional banks that we really don't have a lot of here in Australia. What effectively has occurred was not poor lending standards, but rather a mismatch between the deposits they were bringing in from clients and then what they were doing with those deposits. And in particular, a lot of what regional banks in the US do is lend to businesses, small businesses in particular. So the real concern with regards to what's happening with regional banks as the US is not necessarily that it will be a systemic issue, but that it'll actually reduce the availability of credit within the market, within the economy, and that that will actually have a big handbrake on the economy because small businesses are really the backbone of most economies. When we look at Credit Suisse, which is a globally important bank, it is a very different situation. Again, it is a bank that has had problems and concerns for quite some time. The main issue that's playing out in the market is it's really, rather than it being a credit crisis, it's a crisis of confidence. So it's about confidence in the banking system. And some of the policies and discussions that are coming out from governments, particularly over in the US, where they're actually going to guarantee the deposits and allow the banks to actually sell their assets at par, so at the price they pay, basically means that those deposits are now secure. So with a bit of luck, that will actually, you know, bring confidence back into the banking system and calm nerves.
I've got a couple of final markets-related questions for you. Some huge dividends hitting bank accounts this week. I think about $19 billion worth. It's the biggest week in terms of dividends this season. Shareholders of BHP, Commonwealth Bank, Fortescue, Wesfarmers, for example, all seeing a bump in their accounts with dividends. The question is, though, given the softening economic environment, where do you see dividends going now?
Yeah, what typically happens is the behaviour of people in these markets is usually sometimes quite predictable. So in particular, individuals are facing increased cost of living with inflation. So even though it's coming down, it's still really high. And a lot of the inflation that we've had over the last year is now baked into some of the prices that we have. So you would anticipate that a lot of people might be feeling concerned about that and leave the dividends as cash. We also know that personal savings rates in Australia is starting to fall and credit card usage is actually increasing. So from, you know, anticipation is that people will probably use those dividends to either fund current expenditures, which are increasing in terms of the cost people have to pay for services, or potentially spending down some of that credit card debt. That said, though, if people have the ability and the opportunity, sometimes through these market volatility, that's where opportunity to invest actually comes up. But unfortunately, people often are nervous and prefer to sit on the sidelines during these market conditions.
Okay, and given all of the economic environment conditions we're seeing at the moment, so things like inflation is still high but easing slowly, interest rates may have peaked, but we're still a bit on shaky ground in terms of the global economy. Where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah, I think it's really important for investors to have broad-based diversification. And by that, I mean have a portfolio full of shares, but also bonds and other asset classes, because they will behave differently. Bonds, for example, so be it government bonds and so forth, they are actually now better priced than they've been in a very long time. And people can earn a yield from those bonds. What that means is that during a recession, bonds usually play a very important diversifying role in a portfolio. So within our portfolios, we've been increasing our allocation to that part of the market so that it plays a defensive role if we do go into a recession and if we do have further market sell-offs. The market sell-offs, though, do provide opportunity. The opportunity won't be broad-based, so it'll be important to have an understanding of areas of the market that are able to perform better during a recession and during times of higher inflation.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.